Andy Scheckman, how you doing?
Good to be back, brother.
Good to have you.
It's always easy to remember your name, you know.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I can remember facts and figures and stuff, but names. But yeah. For you, I'll never forget you.
Well, I met your lovely wife the other day, and she is definitely your better half.
She's 100%. Much prettier.
Very sharp. Yeah. So every time I have you on, I really enjoy our talks, and it's so a lot of great energy, but that's selling it wrong, if you would. It's great energy, but it's really great insight.
Thank you.
I really want to see now, I guess, we're having this build up here. We have the bricks, if you would. You explained to me and all of our viewers here 3 months ago how they're adding new members, if you would. We just had news just recently about Saudi really not doing business in different currencies, if you would, other than the dollar. Just give me a 30,000-foot view. Where are we now in regards to where we were on that journey three to 6 months ago? Because it does seem like it's progressing even faster.
Yeah, that's the hallmark of this, Andy, is the acceleration of this group that's finding safety in numbers. There were five original BRICS members, of course, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, which became 10 with the addition of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Ethiopia, and the United Arab Emirates. And then we were kind of in a holding pattern, at least in terms of who was going to join and what was going to change. But there were 200 meetings scheduled from January 1 of this year till the big meeting in October. And here we are, I don't know, 3-4 months away from the big meeting in October in Russia, where lots will be announced. But there were two meetings recently, one in St. Petersburg, one in Novigrad, where a lot of developments came out. Three things in particular really stick out to me. One, 59 countries have come out of the Novigrad meeting saying we're going to join, we're going to apply. And I don't know if that means they have already formally applied, but they said we are going to apply, 59. Now, we don't know which nations they are. They, for whatever reason, keep this kind of close to the vest. And I like the way that they do things from a strategic standpoint. They tell us just enough, but not too much. 59 countries plan to join, but the real important things that came out of, I guess we could back up 1 second and say, before that happened, we had Saudi Arabia in June decide to not re-sign the exclusivity deal with the United States, the petrodollar deal, where some will tell you that they've had the ability to trade in other currencies for the last 50 years, but have chosen basically not to. Close to 95% of all oil sales since 1974 have settled in U.S. dollars. Well, they said, we're not going to sign that exclusivity deal this time. And while we're not dumping the dollar, we can trade wherever we want. Now, they told the folks that in at the World Bank meeting last year in Davos. And, well, that certainly raised some eyebrows. But the actual act of not signing it was big. So we'll go to the Novigrad meeting just a couple weeks ago, which coincided with the G7 meeting in Italy. And the Crown Prince was invited to the G7 meeting, and he said, busy, got other things going on, not going to make it. At the same time, he sent his financial delegates to finance ministers, delegates, to the meeting in Novigrad. Mm-hmm. Big deal. Where information came out that I think is the beginning of the end, you could say, of the dollar hegemony, which you could argue has already been fractured, but maybe even the beginning of the end of the dollar supremacy. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. But basically what happened was there are three people that had a meeting. Putin, Sergei Glazyev, who is the architect of really the common currency unit, the common settlement currency. He's the one for the last 3 years who's been telling the world that there will be a basket of commodities and a basket of currencies of the local BRICS countries that will comprise this new settlement unit. And Dilma Rousseff. Dilma Rousseff used to be the president of Brazil, and she is now the president of the BRICS New Development Bank. Big position, very influential woman. The meeting, upon its conclusion, Dilma said, we have agreed in principle to Sergei Glazyev's plan of a new settlement unit called the Unit. And it will be traded over Project Embridge. Now, let's start with Project Embridge. Project Embridge is a cross-border digital payment system that I've been talking about for over a year. The cross-border payment system sidesteps the SWIFT. It allows these countries to trade their local currencies with one another outside of the purview of the SWIFT. The inability, in fact, it even says, if you go to the BIS webpage, and the BIS is backing the development of the Project Embridge, along with China, Hong Kong, Thailand, and United Arab Emirates. You go to the webpage, or to the white paper on the BIS website, and it right away says it will prohibit the ability of a unipolar set of sanctions, a country's ability to sanction for whatever reason, the way that we have with the dollar. Big deal, right? And one of the things that we should highlight about Project Embridge before we talk about the unit is that Saudi Arabia has become a full participant in Project Embridge, along with the BIS, along with China, Hong Kong, Thailand, and UAE. There's about 20 or 30 countries, maybe 35, that have signed up as observers to Project Embridge. It's one step away from becoming a full participant. It's important to note that the United States dollar It is not compatible with Project Embridge. So you have the largest, you've got the largest producer of oil in the world who just joined the BRICS, joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is the largest regional military organization in the world, told the folks at the New Development Bank, or at the meeting in Davos, we're going to take other currencies, joined the New Development Bank, Saudi Arabia, and didn't sign the exclusivity deal that we are now a full member of the Project Embridge, which is not dollar compatible, which Delma Rousseff said will be the platform by which the new BRICS settlement currency trades. You can see each and one of those things that I mentioned are big in and of themselves. Put them all together into a snowball and they become a whole lot more cohesive. And you can see how this is all developing, but the unit is something that is very, 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 very interesting. And the unit, according to Delma Rousseff, which was agreed in principle, and they said, we will have a special meeting in September in China to more or less discuss the unit with intentions of rolling it out at the big meeting in October. The unit will be a basket of 40% gold. Now, before I move forward, the BIS is behind this, right? Bank of International Settlements, the most powerful bank in the world. The central banker's central bank. The BIS was the exact same group that reclassified gold as the only other tier one reserve asset in 2019. And it's interesting, I want to set the stage because I think it's important to see the progression. In 2017, we had been in 6 years worth of a downdraft in gold market. And about 3 years earlier, the Bundesbank told the United States, give us back our gold, and we didn't really do it. But by 2017, they made a really big stink about it. Followed by, a few weeks later, the Bank of Austria, Hungary, Turkey, Poland, Czechoslovakia, the Dutch National Bank, all of these banks said, give us back our gold, just like you're doing for the Bundesbank. Those banks, the next year in 2018, bought more gold as a group as they did in the previous 60 years combined. And then the next year, 2019, 100% more gold. Massive gold buying spree, repatriating their gold. Repatriating, let's remember that. Repatriating, buying spree, and then somehow, coincidentally, shockingly, the BIS said, oh, by the way, everyone, gold is now a tier one asset. Right. So what I'm saying to you is that they were obviously clued in. Like, we're buddies, and I say to you, listen, here's what's going to happen. You're going to buy this. You're going to repatriate it, because in 3 years, I'm going to make it really important. Okay, I'll do that. And then I tell the world, oh, it's really important. And just Andy happened to have been stockpiling and bringing it home. So let's just keep in mind that's how they do things. Let's go back to the present. BIS is part of Project Embridge, right? So the white paper says on the unit that it'll be 40% gold instead of, as Sergei Glazyev originally said in his thesis, that it would be a basket of commodities. Right. Now, I think they decided that multiple commodities becomes too challenging to balance, and the shipping costs and all of the the problems associated with commodities, gold being the only other tier one asset in the world that all of the central banks have been massively buying,
right,
makes more sense.
Right.
60% a basket of local currencies. Now, before I say the kicker, which is really important, let's keep in mind that in the past 2.5 years, all of those banks that I mentioned, about 30 others, have repatriated all of their gold, including recently Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and about 7 countries from Africa brought all their gold back from the New York Fed. The Bank of India bought 1.5 times the amount of gold they bought all of last year in the first 4 months of this year and brought it home, along with 100 metric tons they've been holding at the Bank of England since 1991. Now, the reason these countries would leave their gold at the Bank of England or the New York Fed was, of course, safe jurisdiction, rule of law, that old thing, but access to the LBMA and access to the COMEX. COMEX would be the Bank of New York, LBMA would be the Bank of England, everything's safe, everything's copacetic. Not anymore. With the weaponizing of the dollar and the treasury market, give us back our stuff. All right, so here's the kicker, right? We see all of these countries repatriating their gold. We see the central banks buying more than any time ever, ever in central bank history, ever, in over 100 years, continuously. Biggest first quarter purchasing by central banks ever, 2024 quarter one, only surpassing 2023 quarter one as the previously biggest quarter ever by central banks, first quarter. You can see the trend, buy, bring it home, buy, bring it home. No counterparty risk. So in the white paper, it says that that 40% gold and the 60% local currency will be created by all of the countries who adhere to the unit. The gold will be held within the borders of each country's sovereignty. So they don't have to send it to Shanghai and leave it there. They don't have to send it to Moscow. Each country
in their own borders,
in their own borders, will hold their own gold. They will be put into an escrow account along with the currency, the 60% currency basket, held in an escrow account, but really, really, really viciously audited, independently audited by independent auditors, and very steep violations for not adhering to the protocol. Mm-hmm. So what it allows these countries to do is not send their gold off to someone else. And do you see the reason maybe why they're repatriating all their gold? Because this new unit, which will be traded on Project Enbridge, which is backed by the BIS, who classified gold as Tier 1, this is the exact same thing that they did in 2017, tell all the banks to buy the gold, repatriate it, and then, hey, surprise, it's Tier 1. Now they're telling everyone, buy more, bring it home, because surprise, you're all going to trade this new settlement currency, which will be 40% gold backed, 60% gold backed, or 60% currency backed to the BRICS units, but you can hold it in your own jurisdiction. It will eliminate the ability of the United States to sanction. The dollar is not compatible on Enbridge. And what it will also really, really do, Andy, if you realize that part of the petrodollar deal was not only to pay for oil in dollars, but to take any excess and put it into treasuries. Well, what do they need dollars for if they're going to settle in a common settlement currency, right, which will be gold and BRICS currencies? And what do they need treasuries for if they are massively accumulating gold for this settlement function? Because gold, over the last 25 years, has doubled the performance of the 10-year treasury with no counterparty risk. You can't get sanctioned, you can't get confiscated. Really, really, really very, very important here is that fact that these central banks have watched what has happened to Russia and to Iran, and they're not going to have any interest in holding our treasuries anymore, and not to mention gold has outperformed it. So when we look at the ramifications of this, I think it massively chips away at the transactional value of the dollar, and then absolutely craters the reserve status of the bond market. In both cases, there's no reason to stockpile them anymore. Right. So this is the beginning of the end, I think, of the dollar and of the treasury in terms of the way we have seen them for the last 50 years. Huge deal.
Huge deal. So there's, I guess, I had Simon Hunt on recently. I don't know who you're familiar with.
Yes.
Simon Hunt. He is saying, and I don't know if you have an opinion on this, that there are talks right now in Washington. Are they going to save the dollar? Not that they could save it. Or are they going to save the bond market? And that is literally the trillion-dollar question, because they are so backed in the corner, they can't save both.
Right.
Is that something that you would
Well, I think they're kind of damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, because if they don't save the bond market, interest rates go
30%.
Yeah, and and so if you everything collapses at that point.
Right.
Everything
right.
collapses. So, you know, it's a situation where you can't really do both, because if you don't save the bond market and interest rates go to 30%, the stock market collapses.
Right.
The bond market obviously collapses. The real estate market collapses. But what about the nearly $200 trillion in debt that the federal government owns in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government military pensions, on top of the $35 trillion debt we have?
Right.
The whole thing collapses.
Right.
And so I would think that that would have a very negative impact on the dollar at the same time. I mean, because when people really are investing in our dollars, aren't they really kind of just investing in our treasuries if they're trying to chase that yield?
Yeah.
The banks will blow up. Where are you going to put your money if interest rates go to 35%? The banks are all, boom, they're vaporized.
Yeah.
All of the banks are massively over-leveraged and undercapitalized.
Right.
I don't know how they would do both. I think this is the great reset
yeah.
that you would talk about. If they don't save the bond market, rates go to the moon. But if they do save the bond market, I guess that means what? By lowering rates? Is that what that means? Does that mean that they're going to buy treasuries to lower the rates? But then the dollar dies, and it all ends up at the same place, because as
yeah.
the dollar dies,
yeah.
there's no demand for the dollar, so rates have to rise.
Right.
And if you have inflation, which would be reignited by you know, dumping treasuries,
yeah.
rates have to rise. If you, you know, or buying treasuries, rather, excuse me, buying treasuries, you know, the yields are going to fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're going to reignite inflation.
Yeah.
And so what happens then? We've signaled to the world we'll never normalize our balance sheet, that we've chosen inflation over austerity. And so there's no reason to hold dollars if we have just chosen inflation over everything. But the point is that inflation has to, you have to have higher rates if you reignite inflation, because at some point you have to compensate for the loss of purchasing power with that inflation. We're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't. And I don't know how you would do one without the other, quite frankly.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. So, in other words, both roads lead to the same place.
Yeah.
And that's why Richard Russell always said, inflate or die.
Yeah.
You know, if you inflate, fine. You choose inflation over austerity. You inflate the dollar, and as inflation goes, rates have to go
right.
at some point.
Right.
You can't have 12% inflation and 5% interest rates, your currency dies.
Yeah.
And by the same token, you know, if you start messing with the bond market and try and, I don't even know how the hell they would do it.
Yeah.
I just don't know how they would do it, because the act of doing that is just going to create the inflation, or just outright defaulting and letting the bond market collapse and rates rise blows up the whole system. This is a bad place that we're in.
Yeah.
We've dug ourselves into too big of a hole. That's what happens when you mess with Mother Nature and suppress interest rates for 20 years and allow the distortion of assets and the misallocation of capital and resources. You're painted into a corner.
Yeah.
And I like Simon, but I can't see how either plan really works, because both roads lead to the same place. Inflation will buy him some more time, but it's going to piss off the rest of the world. Why sell your goods for a currency that's being inflated away?
Yeah. So I had John Williams on, the great John Williams.
Love him.
On, love him too. About a week ago. And you said 12% interest rates. He said, Andy, just according to his figures, he said, take what the rate of inflation is right now, and according to his numbers, which was pre, I want to say 1984, tack on 8 to 9% of that.
Yeah.
That's the real rate yeah. of inflation. So that's where I'm assuming you're getting that.
Yeah, and I've been following him forever. And,
yeah.
you know, that's why, you know, to think that there's only 3% inflation right now is foolhardy.
It's foolish.
Right. And that's why, the, you know, they lie about it. And they, you know, they just, as an example, took coffee out of the CPI index, which was up 80% in the last year because of that, and they replace it with something like tea.
Right.
So they keep lying about the inflation numbers. They strip out food, they strip out energy, they strip out housing, and they tell us that inflation's 3%. I just had 2 sandwiches, a beer, and a wine. My wife and I at the bar here was $111.
Yeah.
But there is no inflation here, at least in Florida. Yeah, man, I don't know how they do that. I really don't. And more realistically, I don't think it's really up to the Fed anymore. I don't think they can save it. I think it's up to the marketplace. Yeah. Because if the dollar loses its reserve status, if this new currency unit starts to take hold and starts to be the alternative in settlement to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury, then the world dumps dollars and dumps treasuries, which pushes rates up, which increases inflation.
Right.
Both at the same time, as those dollars hit our shore, there's way more dollars around the world. Remember, every country's had to stockpile them for 50 years to buy oil. That was the deal. Now they don't need to anymore, at least according to this.
Right.
And according to the deal where Saudi says, we'll sell for whatever we want. So if everyone dumps dollars and dumps treasuries because they can be weaponized,
It
leads to a place, a very dark place, where rates skyrocket based on the market, not on power.
Policy. Or power policy.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
And I've, in my speech today, said, is it too stupid to be stupid? Are they doing this purposely? Do they want to blow up the system? Because if that happens, you now have a villain to point to. Instead of inflate or default, it's those sons of bitches, Putin and Xi and OPEC and the BRICS, they did it to us. They dumped the dollars, treasuries, they dumped the treasuries, rates spiked and everything collapsed. Now we can roll out the CBDC and start over. And it's ironic that, you know, it's you have to think the lead economic advisor is advocating for this. Jared Bernstein,
right.
The number two, Lael Brainard, is advocating for a central bank digital currency and actually developed it with MIT when she was at the Boston Fed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to wonder, is this stuff coincidental or not? But I would tell you, Andy, we've dug ourselves into a hole where I think if we actually try and choose inflation over austerity, we will end up at the exact same place and maybe faster than most people can imagine.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, Andy, I can't thank you enough for coming on and having these conversations. These are the conversations that need to be had.
I agree.
And we said before to each other that you really need to plan, and because hope is not a good strategy.
No.
Yeah, it's not a good strategy.
What did Tyson say? Everyone's got a strategy till they get punched in the nose, right?
That's right.
Again, you know, I wish the message, Andy, was brighter. But the problem is that the media in the West doesn't do a poor job of telling us what's going on. They do no job of telling us what's going on. They create divisiveness. And, you know, people won't get out of the way of what they don't see coming. This new settlement currency, if indeed it is ratified in October, with 59 countries that have formally said they want to join, it's the beginning of the end of the dollar.
Yeah,
it really is, and it may not happen overnight, but it will certainly start to accelerate. And the fact that gold will be part of it within the own borders, minting your own unit tokens, which will be the settlement status, where each one of these countries have their own monetary autonomy, their own monetary authority, not one central BRICS currency, but one central settlement currency. Everyone keeps their own currency, their own monetary policy, in charge of their own economics.
Right.
But gold has never been more important ever than right now, when you have the head of the New Development Bank say it, in principle, we've agreed to this. The BIS saying it's tier one, and all of these central banks buying it and bringing it home because the white paper says the gold will be held within the own borders. I mean, you can't make it up. So everything I said up until that point is all factual. Put it together. Is it going to happen? I don't know. Sure seems like it is. And if it does, things go from a slow trickle to a much faster pace to bang all at once. And, you know, who knows how far away we are from that. But, yeah, if you're not a contrarian right now, you're damn well destined to be a victim as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Andy, you don't need this, but I want to absolutely give it to you. If people want to, I say you don't need it. You are huge, and you're probably the most respected dealer, coin dealer, in the country. And if somebody wants to do business with you, how do they do that?
You know, we keep our really attractive prices close to the vest. We only offer a very small ability to purchase online. Prices aren't as good as if they just send us an email at info@milesfranklin.com. Say Andy Millett sent me. Any questions you heard here, we'll answer for you. If you want to be contacted, put your phone number down, or if you just want to get our prices, our special prices for your listeners, just request the price sheet. We've been doing this for 34 years. We've never had a customer complaint in $10 billion in sales.
Yeah.
Try to find one, you won't. Something we're really proud of. especially in a federally non-regulated industry. We work hard at it, but that would be the best way to reach us, and especially if they come from your listeners, we'll make sure that they're given the white glove treatment. You have my word on that.
I'm sure they would. Thank you so much, my friend. I do appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you're welcome, brother. Thanks for having me.
You bet.